When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Dynamite review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by another one of the Dudley boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of AEW Dynamite. Yeah. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Collision, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Oh! Pay-per-views, premium live events, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete, the Money Good Quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick. Michael Hamflet taking a rare day off today to review AEW Dynamite. Well, thoughts?
Two things very quickly from the jump. It is at time of recording, midday UK time. There will be no broad overview because it's going to go till about 4 o'clock.
Yep.
There's too much to get into. Two, and I mean this legitimately, if it kind of bums you out when we criticize AEW on these podcasts, stop listening to this one and come back next week. I'm serious. I didn't like it very much. It was baffling to me.
Baffling is the word I kept using, yeah.
Baffling. I mean, it's going to be, I think this is going to be very, very interesting, nuanced audio.
Absolutely.
But it's going to be tinged with a negative slant, so you might not enjoy it very much.
Sidge, I'm going in the book hole.
Oh, he's going in the book hole.
Michael Sidgwick loved the idea behind AEW so much, and the early days of AEW so much, he wrote a book about it, right? He really enjoyed writing a book about it. It's a brilliant book, right? Go and buy it, Amazon, you know what to do. He has no desire to write the alternative to that book.
Right? I don't want to write the downfall of AEW. I want AEW to be very good because I don't necessarily rely on it for my happiness, but it kind of helps when the thing I have to watch for my job is exactly. Really good. When it's really good.
Especially when you've been trudging through the mud of WWE with us for so long.
Indeed. When it's really good, this is already the best job in the world. When it's really good, it is also the easiest job in the world. I mean, it's pretty easy for me anyway. It's so easy. The only struggle I have when AEW makes my synapses fire, when it just completely stirs my imagination and I feel it bone deep in my soul, when it's that great, my only problem is condensing my thoughts on it. It flies out of my fingertips. It feels like I've done a day's work. In terms of word count, it feels like I've done a day's work in about 2 hours. That's what I want. This wasn't it.
Yes. And look, at the end of the day, this is our subjective takes on a wrestling show. You are free to disagree with us.
Do it correctly, though.
Yeah. You are free to think that certain angles and certain storylines are actually good and you should let them play out and what have you. This is just how we feel in the moment, in the immediate aftermath of this episode of Dynamite, which, yeah, to steal a word of yours, the first thing I was going to say when I came in today was a baffling show.
It was baffling on so many different levels in terms of directions, in terms of the presentation of certain characters. In terms of even the way in which it was sequenced, it was just so off and
all over the place, wasn't it?
All over the shop. The sequencing was like, why are you starting with this? Why is this happening here? I'll tell you one thing. If you do like positivity in your AEW coverage and you have still kept listening, even though I've said, not today, I don't think, I thought the women's division stuff was really, really strong, and I was really, really charmed and encouraged by it.
Yeah, me and Andy had a good old laugh on the news about the closing angle to this show, which we will get to.
Which is what you weren't meant to do, by the way.
Yes. But as part of the Twitter questions, there was one about the women's division, and I said, you know what, with all this discussion about, like, and we're not burying everything. We're not saying just because Will Ospreay's challenging for the international title now, that's, well, he's dead. That's that finished or whatever. It's just maybe a direction that necessarily some people don't agree with or whatever. But we give praise when we think they deserve it. We have complained. We have campaigned and complained, combined the two words there, about this for such a long time. And there was a question or a statement even that we basically turned into a question on the news about, like, look how many storylines you've got in the women's division and how many storylines don't actually need the title to be revolving around it as well. That's a really interesting and exciting development.
Yes.
And I genuinely now actually believe, having sort of agreed with you that when Mercedes came in, maybe that'll be the sort of change that we've been wanting to see. I was like, yeah, or they'll probably just put a Mercedes match on Dynamite every week and just the world champion, if it's not Mercedes, will be relegated to Collision. Now I'm like, it's kind of, in the words of Cody Rhodes, undeniable.
Yeah.
You can't sit there and say, all right, for 4 weeks, so let's say Mercedes has a match every week and you have Willow. All right, well then, you know, if you only have a couple of women's matches on Collision and a couple on Rampage, you've still got to fit in, you know, how many other champions? Julia Hart's not the champion now, but your Julia Hart's, your Sky Blues, Willow Nightingale, Chris Statlander, Jamie Hayter when she comes back.
Queen Aminata, who I need to see way more of.
Like, I could go on and on and on. Mariah May, all the stardom talent that they're bringing in. And what
Red Velvet, who I still think's got loads about her.
Indeed. You know, the list can go on and on and on. Britt Baker, I'm forgetting a million different people here, but they are queuing up to do more stuff with women, hopefully, on AEW television. So that's good, and we'll get to that in due course. Let's start at the beginning of the show. We'll go through it because this is the easiest way, even though, like you say, it was a bit...
What?
Opens, Excalibur welcomes us, alongside Tony and Taz, of course, and we go to footage from earlier on in the day, the Young Bucks pulling up, along with Kazuchika Okada, and then another car pulls up behind them, and there is Jack Perry, the man everyone's talking about. And security immediately rushes over to get him out of there, but they say, hey, he's with us. And we'll revisit this throughout the show. And the opener of this show was not a match. It was Chuck Taylor decides who's his best friend, basically.
Yeah, again, this is what we were talking about when we were talking about the sequencing and how just weird it felt. To this day, even though they've done it quite a fair bit, especially over the last 2 years, to this day, I still find it, oh, it's starting with an angle or a promo segment, you know? That's just not what you associate with Dynamite. And, you know, every now and then, that's fine. It's one thing. I was just firmly expecting Swerve Strickland to come out. Mission statement.
Exactly.
Here's what I'm about. Whatever. Here's a hint of my future direction or whatever. Starting with a mid-card angle, like in media res, was just so odd. It's one thing to start with a main event promo or a, you know, a promo train or a face-to-face.
Or Ospreay coming out, for example.
Yeah, this was a mid-card angle. It was just odd.
Mm.
The wrong way around almost all show long.
And so, yeah, Orange Cassidy's music hits and then he just gets thrown out of the entranceway by Trent Barretta, who's beating him up, beats him into the ring, basically. Trent grabs the mic and says, Chuck, it's time, get out here. And he comes out. Trent apologizes for not doing this sooner to Orange Cassidy. They spent 5 years hugging a narcissistic prick. Cassidy was meant to be their mascot, and yet they ended up being his lackeys.
Good line.
Yeah. Cassidy doesn't care about you, Chuck. He's not your friend, but I am. I care about you. You've got to give the people what they want, basically, says Trent. He goes for a hug. Taylor's seemingly going for it, then he stops him, takes a second, contemplates, and says, Trent, I always knew you were a piece of shh. Hits him with a microphone. Barretta bails. And Taylor yells that the doctors won't clear him for the ring, so they're going to have a fight in the parking lot. Dying.
I honestly thought this was a really good twist. I still want, at some point, and I still think it might happen soon, Chuck Taylor heel.
I was hoping for this here. I was slightly disappointed that they went this direction.
I was slightly disappointing, but at the same time, I always appreciate a good twist. I like to be kept guessing when it's not too stupid to do so. And the idea of them doing a parking lot fight is in Daly's place in a sort of the first chapter of a blood feud. Maybe it's a bit too quick for the escalation, but we know the law there. We know the guarantee there. It's a really, really cool idea that took me completely aback. I was really into this. It was just so odd to, it was just odd to adjust to this weird sequencing and where this fit into the show. Ultimately, the content of it was, I will caveat this, it was decent with a promise of something great on Rampage of all shows. And on Fight TV, I heard everything crystal clear. Mm. Apparently, on the TBS feed, we are like months away from the 5-year anniversary, birthday. WWE have completely broken my brain.
I don't know
what it is anymore.
5 years on from when it started.
Yes, correct. And these audio issues persist. How is there not a root and branch investigation into how this keeps happening within, a month?
Mm.
How is this still happening?
Especially when they're in a venue that they know.
They know it inside out, inside out. But it's not the venue that's the issue, because it happens in so many different venues. It's just, how have they not addressed this yet? It's ridiculous.
This is one of those things where you literally, legitimately can just throw money at the problem until it gets fixed.
Odd.
Anyway, we get an awesome Mox backstage promo talking about how everyone shouldn't underestimate his opponent tonight, Powerhouse Hobbs. He looks like a truck and he hits like 1-2. Mox knows what's at stake tonight. If he makes one mistake, everything comes crashing down. The Don Callis family put a hit on his friend. He knows what it takes to get the job done. Tonight's going to suck, he said. He's going to take a beating, but this is the greatest sport in the world. And tonight he'll remind everyone exactly why. And they'll know from Jacksonville to Tokyo.
Lovely line to sign off. Really good promo. Shame about the match that actually followed.
Hope Powerhouse Hobbs is all
right. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It's just, you never wish an injury on anyone, but especially Hobbs. I'm like, no. He goes down, and I'm like, he's staying down for too long.
Yeah.
And the way they just went to the finish, I was like, that doesn't look good, but who knows? We'll see. And then we got the world champion out. Swerve Strickland against Carl Fletcher in a title eliminator match. Prince Nana comes out first and tells everyone, give it up for the new AEW world champion. And he dances with Strickland, who looks great with the world title around his waist, down to the ring. Don Callis joins commentary, so it's not all good news. He calls Carl Fletcher a puppy with big paws and says the family's always looking to recruit. Please God, no. So they go back and forth early on. Fletcher sends Strickland to the floor, but he's getting into it with Prince Nana, and that allows Strickland to hit a backdrop and a pump kick off the apron. That takes us to a break. When we come back, we also see footage of the Elite and Jack Perry nipping into Tony Khan's office. More on that later, with Marvez being terrible at his job. Well, trying his best, I suppose, but them all just blanking him. But as I said, Fletcher tries a half and half on the apron. Strickland counters into a neck breaker. Strickland hit a swerve stomp on the edge of the ring, but came up clutching his ankle. Thankfully, this one was all right. This was just part of the match, because for a split second, I was like, oh, God, no.
Not on the first match.
Yeah. But it was just brilliant workers, these two. So obviously, Carl targets that. He gets him in an ankle lock. Swerve gets the ropes. They trade some counters. Strickland hits an up kick, a rolling flatliner, and a brain buster for a near fall. They trade tombstone attempts. Fletcher actually connected on a spinning tombstone for a near fall. Callis screams, Melbourne! Or Melbourne from commentary, which is apparently some strategy where Carl's meant to go into the ring and get something. I think it was a table.
Like a code word or something.
Yes, exactly. And Fletcher eventually decides against it. He goes in, leaping corner kick, but Strickland fights out the corner, hits a swerve stomp. Carl kicks out, but then Strickland hits a house call, flush in the face. There's a great photo that Phil Chambers showed me on AEW's website, or AEW's photos, of the house call when he gets hit. Oh, and I say flush. It looks great. Half his face is...
Oh, yeah.
Looks great. Anyway, 1-2-3, Swerve wins. And we get the good news from Excalibur that Kenny Omega's returning next week.
Yeah, it was weird. Not for the first time on the show they announced the return of Kenny Omega in and around a Swerve Strickland match or immediately following a graphic indicating that you will hear about the opponent for Double or Nothing for Swerve. Got too excited there. What I think is happening is that they can't, unless they've worked us, which obviously I would love because it means Kenny Omega's back quicker than expected. Next week's Dynamite emanates from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, which is where Kenny Omega's from. It just feels like maybe he's going to do a thanks, I'll come back, maybe tease what I'm going to do when I come back. I don't want to get too excited about it.
You know, I this is maybe the very rare you see this side of me, the slightly pessimistic side of me. There you go. Great news, everyone. Swerve Strickland's going to defend the world title at Double or Nothing against someone from Winnipeg, Canada.
No, shut up, man. Not happening.
But not Kenny Omega, anyway. That's Hamlet whispering in my ear.
Honestly, he's the worst.
I don't know which one you're referring to there, but I agree on both counts.
Yes.
Renee Paquette's backstage with Thunder Rosa. Well, you haven't talked about the match.
I don't know about the match. I didn't think much of it, to be perfectly honest. Why didn't this open? Like, little details matter. If this had opened, it would be like, we cannot wait to get him out. You can't wait to see him. Like, welcome you to the show. He is the new goddamn star of It's Swerve Strickland. If you put someone, I know it's like, if you put someone in an undercard position in terms of the sequencing of the show, they automatically appear a little bit like an undercard guy.
Yeah, not top of the hour, not main event.
Remember when Hangman Page won his world title? Start of the show, big celebration, felt like a real feel-good, important moment. Just came out in the second seg. And
he didn't even get like a promo. Actually, you know what? You know how the Young Bucks are brilliant details, guys? We've talked about it on numerous occasions. It might actually quite be a fun tease for what came later of Young Bucks arrive, Okada, Jack Perry, he's with us. And then the next thing you hear is, whose house? Mm. Might be a quiet night. Like, who's running this place, actually?
Maybe.
A little bit. Maybe I'm getting a bit.
Maybe you're reaching, bro.
A bit, yeah.
But it's nice that you are. Yeah. Usually you do it only for the Fed.
Yeah.
Well, the sequencing of this is baffling. The lack of pomp and circumstance was baffling and really, really, like, poorly judged. He might as well have won the TNT title at Dynasty Dynasty and then just came out for his first open challenge.
Nothing against her, but Willow Nightingale had a bigger celebration on this show.
Indeed, and maybe you don't think you can do two, but you can do something more than this. It was just, he felt like he'd won the TNT title at Dynasty Dynasty, and he decided to do the open challenge gimmick, and that's sort of his new persona, the defending fighting champion, already a bit bland. And again, the sequencing just illustrated that this is just a bad, weird, poorly judged night. And on the match, I don't want to keep going on this point, but I think it's crucial. Swerve did an awesome, awesome job with Takeshita when that was a bit of a risk, because Swerve versus Takeshita was mere weeks after Revolution and Ospreay Takeshita. Mm. I thought one match was better than the other, but Swerve Takeshita was so great in the last 5 minutes. That was a worthy, all right, okay, yeah. Iron sharpening iron here. The Ospreay-Fletcher match was 10 times better than this, and they are continuing for, I thought this was a bad pitch, to invite the crowd to draw comparisons between the wrestler who's got the belt and the person who, well, this time yesterday anyway, kind of had his name on it. So I thought Ospreay Fletcher was better than Swerve Fletcher. I don't think this was good matchmaking. And I will say that the bit where he did the Swerve stomp on Fletcher's face and then clutched at his ankle, a really good bit of selling, because my heart was in my mouth a bit thinking, oh, you know, I'm not entirely optimistic about this title reign. You still want to give him every single chance to succeed. And I think there was a good bit of booking later that might give him the platform to do so. We'll get to that. But I was like, come on, he deserves the chance after all that time, after all that hard work, after all that graft. Then when he immediately saw Fletcher go for the ankle lock, it was like, thank God, it's part of the match. And then I invested in it on the terms of the fiction. Other than that moment, this really was a fairly, wasn't even that much heat to it. I thought this was a late 2010s moves with a Z cliche match, kind of sub PWG, kind of what I've seen a lot of, almost too much of. in recent years. And in addition to just the feeling of, oh, those are some cool moves, and it's well worked for what it is, but it's a bit familiar. Why is he letting Kyle Fletcher kick out of the swerve stomp? It's continuing that trend of you get so many 50-50 back and forths where the pushed wrestler gives a lot to the person they are predictably going to beat, which is, I guess, you know, part of the Dynamite formula. I don't necessarily think it works that often, and they should deviate from it at times. If you're going to do that, at least protect your finish.
Yeah.
When you're the newly minted world champion, protect the hell out of your finish. This just didn't do enough for me.
Especially just going to immediately follow up with a house call anyway.
Indeed. Yeah. I just thought that this was poorly judged.
So Renee Paquette's backstage with Thunder Rosa. She's not going to make excuses for losing at the pay-per-view. She just then proceeded slightly going to making excuses.
Yeah.
But it's basically her and Deonna Purrazzo getting into it, getting into a shove match. There's another two names there I should have mentioned earlier. That another women's feud, non-title, that I'm really excited to see.
Not that excited, but it's good that they're trying.
Yes. Then we get a recap of Danielson Ospreay. It's quite good. From AEW Dynasty.
I watched it again. It's even better the second time.
I've need to watch that.
It is so unbelievably awesome. I was watching it in the break room and Hamflet came in. And I just forgot he was there and started shrieking. The bit where Ospreay just flies into that hidden blade as if, like, Concussion City if he connects.
Mm-hmm.
And Danielson ducks and hits the Psyche from Ospreay just flying into the turnbuckle, turning round, and then doing a sort of implosion bump off the Psyche. It's like, how do you move your body like that? Mm. And we'll get to that. Imminently, how do you do those things with that incredible body of yours?
Mm. And then we got a women's match in the first hour.
We did.
Mina Shirakawa versus Anna Jay. Jay tries for the quick start, but Shirakawa goes after her, targets the knees, avoids a charge in the corner, hit a comeback kick, goes for a figure four. But Anna Jay gets the ropes to break it, rakes the eyes, hits a neck breaker through the ropes to take over as we go to a commercial break. When we come back, Anna Jay avoids a charge in the corner, but there's a diving knee drop to the chest from Shirakawa. Dangerous Jay kick and gory bomb gets a two count for Anna Jay. Shirakawa hits the dragon screw, goes for the figure four again, but once again, Anna Jay gets the ropes. Missile drop kick and enziguri from Shirakawa. But Jay floats over the glamour driver into the Queen Slayer, but Anna Jay is distracted because Mariah May, I should have mentioned, is at ringside. And Shirakawa escapes into the glamour connection pin attempt to get the 1-2-3. Post-match, in slides May with the champagne to celebrate. But Anna Jay attacks from behind, puts her in the Queen Slayer. Timeless Toni Storm runs out to make the save. And in amongst all this, she's kicked off her shoes and dropped her title to run in to save Mariah May. Who should walk out onto the stage? We sort of teased this yesterday, but one Serena Deeb.
Yep.
Great to see this, because we were like, what are you going to do now? You were saying it's a bit early for the Mariah May thing, and, you know, you've got Mercedes busy over here and blah, 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 and Statlander, etc. So Serena Deeb walks out. We love Serena Deeb. She hoys Toni Storm's shoes and instead grabs the women's title. It says the next time she touches this title, it's going to belong to her. She's the next challenger for Toni Storm, and I love it.
I was really impressed with all of this. The booking, the action, the character development, the way things dovetailed. A really good night for the women's division. What I really liked about this match is that it wasn't a blowaway great match. It was, and you know, yet again, the longest feeling commercial break
yes.
always gobbles up the one women's match, and it's bollocks. But this is lean, and I thought Anna Jay, who is way too young for the spot, mm-hmm. but there aren't many, did a really good job of just showcasing Shirakawa's offense, of selling for it, of just making her opponent look good. And Shirakawa, at one floor, like the best thing was also kind of a floor, the float over into the Queen Slayer from the Glamour Driver attempt. Like, I really wish they did a more elongated submission tease. But they didn't, and it got wrapped up quite quickly after that. But the whole idea here is that I think where the storyline is going is that in this sort of weird sort of romance adjacent angle between, well, not weird, but also really good, Mariah May and Toni Storm, she is in effect beginning a torrid love affair with Shirakawa.
Love triangle, perhaps.
Yes, right. If this is bad or just there or not good, and I thought this was good, it doesn't work at all. There was almost as much pressure on this as like a title match because Shirakawa has to look really good here, and she did. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if Mariah May starts idolizing her and is besotted with her, the whole thing just falls flat. It's like, well, she's not very good. Toni Storm's like the best in the division almost, yes, or up there in the conversation and the champion. So I thought there was a lot riding on this. And Serena Deeb versus Toni Storm, now that Toni Storm has... It was always senseless that she tried to over-gimmick the matches. I think everyone was more than happy to be, all right, okay, you're really entertaining in skits and promos, and you can just get it done in the ring.
Exactly.
That's how it should have been all along. They've pivoted at long last between the Izumi match and that really good Thunder Rosa match at Dynasty. So they've built a match that you are guaranteed is going to be really good at a minimum. It would be one of those where it'd be shocking if it didn't click.
Yes.
You've advanced the love triangle of sorts. And what you've also done with the clever inclusion of Anna Jay is that people are more than prepared to cheer Toni Storm. And she's, I know it's a different era of Hollywood, but she should do that. Oh my God, you love me. You really love me when she turns babyface. And through the way in which all of this was really quite deftly plotted. I didn't really think I was going to say deftly today, the mood I was in, about the show, not in general goddamn life. Toni Storm, who fans are beginning to embrace as the babyface, and Mariah May is going to be the heel. Through the way this was plotted, did a proper babyface save. I thought, this is really elegantly done. I was really impressed with the booking here.
But it was, let me just check.
Yeah,
was the only women's match on the card, unfortunately. For now, like I say, there are really positive signs, I will say. Although they did sort of go, right, all the women's stuff in one bit. Let's get Mercedes and Willow out here in a second. But before we get to that, we have to get to the name of the game. Before we get to the name of the game, we have to get to the aim of the game.
You have to get to the aim of the game first. And the aim of the game is to identify to the hour, minute, and second the first time you hear the first note for the first entrance theme for the first woman to arrive for the only women's match on Dynamite. Historically, it always settled in that 120 to 125 minute range. The idea being, hang on, guys, it feels really token, obligatory, like it's not a passion project. You don't have much care for it, and you're only doing it because the bloody kickoff won't. It's 2024. You have to put the bloody birds on now. To us anyway, feels like the thought process. And if you're struggling with that thought process, and if this is a bit of a long-winded thing, and it is, we've jingleized how we perceive that AEW thought process. And it is, because of the timing, usually, of these women's segments. Guys, don't worry. When the main when the women come out to play, the main event ain't too far away. So that's the aim of the game.
Here we go.
And the name of the game is... Just one match. Just one match. Ladies' night.
You've delivered.
Because I got the Hetfield and the Daft Punk and the ladies' night. It was One More Time by Daft Punk. I can't sing. Why I insist on singing every week? Twice a week. I don't know what I'm doing.
You wouldn't catch me doing that. Anyway, shout out to... Check out Wrestle Culture tomorrow. Shout out to the Panda Blair himself, Adam Blair, at Adam Wilton 4, and Jose Palomares at The Ho 11, the guys who always take care of the...
data.
For this sort of thing. Sige, I'm going to give you time to pull out the numbers that we guessed, because we were... Well, I certainly was about an hour off here. So, what were our guesses for Ladies' Night in ascending descending
order? Well, they were Michael Sidgwick, 1 hour, 9 minutes, and 56 seconds. Michael Hamflat, 1 hour, 19 minutes, and 50 seconds. Adam Wilborn, I don't know you from Adam. 1 hour, 22 minutes and 30 seconds.
Miles off all of us, because it was 0 hours, 31 minutes and 47 seconds. Michael Sidgwick, you are on the board for Ladies Night in 2024.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Only a couple more and you'll catch me on three. Hamlet leading on four so far. So just a few more weeks and you can be easily leading this. But like I said, we followed the women's match with the Willow Nightingale TBS title celebration. They're fresh off their party at Chuck E. Cheese. Never been to a Chuck E. Cheese.
I've never been, and I have one regret about Philly.
What's that?
There wasn't time. We did a lot of graft, and you have to think about our food and breakfast. Didn't go to Dave and Buster's.
I want to go Dave and Buster's. I want to go Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah, there's a few places that I want to tick off in my America hit list without question. Do you reckon Chuck E. Cheese, do you ever have a Charlie Chalks up here?
I don't think so.
I used to love them.
Oh, my God.
It's a shame that's the first time I've hit it. We should have probably hit it before that. I used to love Charlie Chalks. That was like the birthday spot that you'd go in
like Johnny Gargano.
But they've been to Chuck E. Cheese. That was what Stokely Hathaway, of course, promised. He compared Willow Nightingale winning the TBS title of Dynasty to the Bill Withers song, Lovely Day. Chris Statlander did a poem, and Hathaway described it as two packs of ass. I love Stokely Hathaway so much, man. I love Statlander and Willow, of course, as well. And they introduced Willow. Caprice Coleman's on commentary, and he's singing
along. I like
that
a lot. That was a nice touch.
It's one of those ones where you just like, I 100% believe all these people are just genuinely happy for Willow Nightingale. Yeah.
I mean, I certainly am.
Hathaway said he didn't initially like Willow. She said, don't worry, the feeling was mutual. He compared it to a fungus, but she grew on him, and he's proud of her. Willow talks about being in the crowd 4 years ago, and then a couple of years ago, finally getting the All Elite graphic. And now, look, here she is. It says, congrats, Willow, on the screen, and she's the face of TBS. And then immediately Mercedes...
Hang on, where's your manners, man?
Immediately we hear Mercedes...
Money.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to... I don't know. Get us... copyright struck. CEO, of course.
CEO.
She steals the spotlight. She walks down to the ring and tells the fans, say hello to your CEO. And Willow quite rightly says, this is like the fourth time you've interrupted me. If you've got something to say, just say it. Moni says, I just want to congratulate you. Hey, TBS champion. And basically, she says, you're going to hold it for a whole 32 days because you're looking at the next TBS champion. She alludes to the attack recently. Statlander says it couldn't have been her. Those lights went off and lights came back up and you were laying on the ground. How do we know you were even attacked, basically? Stokely, I think it was, who said, it was obviously Julia Hart. Nightingale basically says, do you think I actually deliberately hurt you in our match last year? And Statlander has to hold back Stokely for saying, obviously she does. And Money says, look, Willow, you just don't want the truth. You just want to make yourself feel better for what happened. And Willow said, no, I felt awful. You know, I was champion. I got back to my hotel room and I thought, am I champion? Like, could I actually have beaten Money? She feels basically like there should be a huge asterisk next to that title win. But not next to this one, not next to the TBS title win. And she's going to show Mercedes Money why she's the TBS champion. And Monet said, enjoy it while you can. You know deep down, you can't beat me. And she goes to just walk off. And Statlander's like, don't be like that. Grabs the arm of Monet, who turns around, thinks it's Willow that's grabbed her, and slaps the taste out of her mouth. Statlander holds back Nightingale alongside Stokely Hathaway, and Bryce Remsburg has to escort Mercedes out of the ring.
The most succinct way I can put this across is that I thought this was a really well-developed or advanced version of an idea that I still think has core problems, but you can't really get around that. The whole thing is the continuity of the ankle stuff in their match, how important was that when the alternative could have been, you could maybe touch upon that in a future program between Money and Willow, how important was strict continuity when you could have just told a wholly fictional story involving Mercedes money that didn't split the sentiment between the fans.
Agreed.
So that's the core problem. I'm not convinced it was that important that it was like the ultimate way in for the money program. Okay. All that said, for the first time, it felt emotionally affecting. You could sense both wrestlers' point of view. You weren't necessarily, you still split to a degree, but you could see from both sides. Like I thought each wrestler did a really good job of conveying this is how they felt. This was the emotional remnants of that entire fateful night, and they both came across as real human beings, which has been a significant problem for Mercedes Moné since arriving. So this is a big improvement in that regard. It felt like if you're going to do Shades of Grey layers, who do I like, who do I not like? If you're going to do that, and I still contend not the best idea, this was the best version of that dynamic so far, and I had a really good time with it. One thing I'll say is that Willow Nightingale is so goddamn likable and good and real feeling that even when she does something technically wrong, I'll never begrudge her for it. So when they're having the face-to-face, this badly needed prolonged eye contact, intense, this has been at the back of my mind for a year, a full year I've agonized over it. We're finally talking face-to-face. You wouldn't break eye contact with that person. God bless her. Willow Nightingale was kind of looking at the ringside camera as she was delivering the promo and said it to Mercedes Moné. That, to me, was featured on a bug because almost awkward, technically not the right thing to do, but it just she never feels stilted or practiced or like she's working. She just feels sometimes a little bit awkward. She can stumble over her words. She sometimes doesn't know where to put herself. But she's just a real human being. And it's
so quite well with the story of like, yeah, I beat you and I'm a champion, but I feel a bit sheepish about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, honestly, again, you're right. Feature not a bug stuff. I'm way into this match than I was. Ultimately, I think it will all end with, right, we've had the match. Let's shake hands. All that's behind us. Mercedes versus heel Statland.
Yeah. And I've said this a million times, especially when it comes to WWE, just because something sometimes is predictable doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. I love this ghost at the feast, not really, but the Statlander being there and you're like, they're talking about the attack, they're talking about, you know, they're all focusing on, oh, it's going to be a fair fight, me and you, and I'm like, she's right there.
Yeah.
But I like that, so.
It's one of those, it depends on the follow-up here, because my whole problem, it's not just WWE I've come to realize, even though they used to be so much worse than it.
Oh, yeah.
With invisible camera stuff. Yeah. Mercedes Moné has got the ability to watch this program.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot pretend next week that Mercedes still thinks that Willow was the one who slapped her.
That's first thing you do when you get... What happened there?
Yeah, what happened there? Let's watch this back. All right, okay.
Mm.
So, it's the WWE brain. AEW is usually great at this kind of thing. Well, you know, bare minimum of logic.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Alex Marvez is waiting outside of Tony Khan's office. He's going to get the scoop here to ask whether or not Jack Perry's been reinstated. All of them walk past him and completely brush him off, except for Matthew Jackson, who says, no, I will say Jack Perry is going to meet Tony Khan in the ring tonight, and they show footage of him ripping up his contract at Battle of the Valley, or Battle in the Valley even. And yeah, that sees for a little bit later on. And then I was looking at the clock later when they got to that IWGP Heavyweight Championship match, and I was like, have they forgotten about
this?
But not yet. Then, this wasn't advertised before. I mean, it's very super late, wasn't it? Because I was like, we could have got a game out of this.
I don't know if it was because I'm rubbish with like remembering moves. So I went on a write-up. I was like, right, okay. Someone who would know, who wrote from America, was kind of nonplussed by this match and the rules of it. I don't want to sound... I want to get it out of the way because this is the highlight of the entire show for me. I really... The last person I would ever want to be confused with is a bad faith concern troll along the lines of, you know, if they just explained the rules better, maybe the casual fans would like it more. Maybe I was half awake. Maybe it's not that complicated because it's cable wrestling in the States. I was a little bit baffled. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Well, what is it? Is it a rumble? Because it's staggered entrances. And I think Dante Martin got tossed out of the ring early. I was like, all right, okay, so he's been eliminated? And to be fair, even the commentators were like, is there more coming out?
They did, truly, didn't they? Siobhan said, I think, at one point, I'll swear, again, maybe I was half asleep, I'll swear he said there could have been 20 people in this match. It was just first of all to a finish, wasn't it? It was pinfall submission, and you win.
They could have just put it a little bullet point list of the rules. That's what I would have liked. It was weird as well. Like, why wouldn't you advertise that Will Ospreay, the guy who has just worked? I don't know if I agree with this. I will let things settle. Many people have said that is one of, if not the very best matches on US soil. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you say, I know he's on the show, this guy who's just had that match? I don't think AEW realize, and maybe in their defense, that's how normalized great matches have become. This one exceeded that already ridiculous standard. Sell the fact that you've just put on what many people are saying is the best match in American history, you know? The guy who won it is on this show. You're going to see him again. You know what? Right. Now, I'll save it for after the recap. No, I'll say it now because I'm going to forget it.
Okay.
What really annoys me about Tony Khan, and I've got what is now becoming a trademark tortured Sidgwick analogy.
Oh, yes.
Of the week, right? Okay. You see something like the way he just presented or failed to present Swerve Strickland, the new ace, apparently, like the new world champion, okay? And I just looked at it like, what are you doing with him? And then various other things, like, why would you start your show with this? And there's like, it's not just this week. There's various things that he's done or not done where you think the real basics of promotion, sometimes dry and boring, but fundamental, crucial. It just sometimes doesn't get, like, the promotion, the razzmatazz out the ears, the gaga that you need to really let this one breathe. Just basics of wrestling promotion that it just sometimes fails to get. And yet, skipping ahead in the recap, there's a moment here where Will Ospreay, haunted by the convulsing body of Bryan Danielson still lingering in his head at Dynasty Dynasty, goes to execute unconsciously the Tiger Driver 91 on Kyle O'Reilly with his series of neck issues and the fact that he almost had to retire, had a really harrowing period of surgery and rehabilitation. And in that moment, I thought, no, I'm not doing that to him, of all people. What an inspiring inspired.
Oh, absolutely.
Inspired sequence within this match, right?
And then it's something that Don Callis picks up on as well.
Yes. And it's the that's the level of detail I associate with AEW at its best. And yet you present Swerve Strickland like that, the basics. You know, Tony Khan is a booker.
Go on.
At El Tarapt.
So that's such a niche reference.
At El Tarapt was this incredible, incredible skill merchant.
Streets won't forget.
Streets won't forget at El Tarapt. He was a Premier League footballer, and I will try and expand this analogy to make it less niche if you don't like football, right? He was this Premier League footballer who was so unbelievably skillful that he would sort of beguile his opponents, nutmeg and dribble past them at the same time, dragging back the ball, nutmegging them, putting the ball through the legs. There's a famous clip where he does this insane skill and one of his teammates just does the scream pose.
I think
pose.
He's against Spurs, maybe.
He does the scream pose. One of his teammates who's in the foreground of the shot, like, how have you just pulled that player's pants down, right? But the thing with Adel Tarapt is that he didn't go on to sign for Real Madrid. He never went on to win the Ballon d'Or. I don't think he ever won a big trophy in his life, because he didn't really grasp the basics of the game. He was just better at it and worse at it at the same time than every other footballer.
At least the teams he played for as well.
We've had, as a Newcastle fan, we've had a guy called Hatem Ben Arfa.
Yeah, same.
A Frenchman. It was just unbelievable in terms of get the ball at his feet and he will just do the most entertaining skills, the most lung-bursting runs, the most unbelievable solo goals. You say to him, right, you need to do this basic principle of the game and pass to him and learn this and do this basic thing that you can't, like, track him back or whatever, and he never, ever applied it. It's Tony Khan's booking. Mm. He's so good at things that nobody else can do, and yet the things that should be quite easily coachable, he just, 5 years in, sometimes fails to get. There's a famous anecdote about Adel Tarapt as well, where it might just be a bit of apocrypha, a bit of football bollocks, where one of his old managers, Harry Redknapp, would fine his players if they passed to Adel Tarapt in their own half. Like, don't do that, you'll lose the ball. He'll get pressed. He doesn't know what's going on. You pass it to him 40 yards out, he'll skin two or three players and create a chance. He's a liability defensively because he doesn't understand the basics of positions, tactics, like system, shape. Tony Khan is Adel Tarapt.
Okay?
Or Hatem Ben Arfa.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, there's loads of players like this who just are unbelievable with the ball, doing things that are so, got so much flair, so much, I don't know. It's a very tortured analogy, but that's what I came up with, half asleep, very early in the morning.
So yeah, it was the Casino Gauntlet. Whoever wins this gets the international title shot at Double or Nothing. We start, and as is sort of explained, yeah, people just will keep joining until someone wins. So we start with Switchblade Jay Watt and Dante Martin. It's sudden death, as I say. Martin flying around all over the place, drop kick. Jay White sidesteps a dive, but Martin amazingly lands on his feet, hits a pump knee. Dante got knocked to the outside. That's what you were alluding to earlier. And out comes Penta. Crossbody off the top to take us to a break. When we come back, Kyle O'Reilly comes in after the break. Tries an armbar on Dante Martin, but switches to a heel hook on White. And then out comes Will Ospreay. Just lights up the place immediately.
Gotta say, when Will Ospreay came out, I went, what?
I was the same.
I was like, what?
In this?
Yeah, we'll get to it.
Gets into it with Kyle O'Reilly. Crowd's loving it, obviously. At one point, Martin and Penta try to double team Ospreay, and he hits them with a double handspring Pele kick, which looked class.
Oh my God. Yeah,
bad timing.
So far, I've only used it for...
I'm going to use it quite a few times in this recap, I expect.
We got a great face-off between Jay White and Will Ospreay. I think Jay White faked a handshake in there to launch an attack. Ospreay eventually hits a standing Spanish fly on Dante Martin. He's cleared the ring. He's looking very pleased with himself. And then Lance Archer comes out and he sells it amazingly. He just lays out everyone, does Lance. Choke slams Martin onto White. Penta gets mowed down. O'Reilly countered a choke slam into a guillotine and then just gets launched to the floor. and Archer grabbed Ospreay, black out over the top onto a pile of guys to another break.
Oh my God.
That's great.
What a ridiculous... People, like, we've been normalized to risk, normalized to spectacular stuff. That is a... It's just people get glossed over and it's not fair. So I want to labor on this point. Mm-hmm. God damn it. He's taking a header. If that, what if he doesn't get caught? Mm-hmm. And that happens about 20% of the time.
And then Commander's out. Like, oh, great. Ospreay's in there. Commander's going to be in. Well, Ospreay's involved in the match. He's currently being killed by Lance Archer. There's a top rope walk on Lance Archer. It looks like he stopped him and going to power bomb him off the apron through some tables that had been set up during the break. But in the end, Commander reverses it. Hurricane Rana through the tables. And then we get...
Oh, my God.
That was class as well. Then we get Commander and Ospreay. A wall walk in Suguri. But Commander comes back with a deja vu head scissors. Jay White tries to sneak in. Ospreay flips out of a Blade Runner into a Liger Bomb for two. Signals for the hidden blade. And then Jay Lethal comes out. That distracts Will Ospreay. Lethal runs wild. Lethal injection to Penta. White's there, gets a sleeper suplex. It's everyone flying in all over the place here with their big hits. Nice counters from Ospreay and Kyle O'Reilly. Ospreay avoided a lariat into a hidden blade. And then, yeah, as you said, gets Kyle O'Reilly, muscle memory, sets up for the Tiger Driver. But he, oh, no, I don't want to do this because of what happened with Danielson, as I said, at Dynasty Dynasty. O'Reilly puts a cross arm breaker on. Commander flies in with the rope walk shooting star. But Ospreay hits a hidden blade to hit Commander. 1, 2, 3. 21 men, actually, as written in my notes here. Tony Schiavone says could have been involved in this match. Regardless, Ospreay wins the match. He will face Roderick Strong for the international title at Double or Nothing. And there's a face-off from the Undisputed Kingdom as Ospreay celebrates in the ring.
I completely missed this. So Schiavone said... Theoretically, there could have been 21.
I think so.
I really like that detail because one of my key problems, the Face of the Revolution match isn't even as good as WWE Money in the Bank. See, I can be tribalistic on the other bloody... On the USA. The casino ladder match is always so bad because it never goes to three and someone just wins. It just makes it so contrived. This was like an anti-contrivance. Mm. I really enjoyed that aspect. I wish I'd picked it up. I was half asleep. I kind of loved this match. A little baffled by it. and when Ospreay came, I went, what? And we'll have a separate conversation about Ospreay and the international title picture imminently. But in terms of this match, other than... It was kind of a rumble, but with pinfall instead of... Mm-hmm. Sudden death rumble with pinfalls, basically. A rumble variation. In terms of the action, this apart from the CM Punk... Cody Rhodes sequence. This smoked January. And I'll tell you, he was awesome in this match. It was obviously built for everyone to have a little bit of shine. Whoever's survived the melee goes face to face with the next entrant and they do a sequence. It's rumble,
yeah,
rhythm, structure, whatever. What an inspired choice it was for Jay White, who I thought had a great night. And the first thing that came to my head was, maybe you should have signed to WWE because you'd be awesome in a rumble match. His demeanor, his sense of strategy, his ring IQ, his positioning. He was so good at playing like the scavenger of, I know. He's like, the character is really diamond sharp. And his ability to play the scavenger of, right, okay, I'll sell for a bit. I'll kind of play possum. Right, okay, I can get in there, switchblade. Like, he'd be awesome in a rumble.
Yeah.
He's kind of got that brain as a character and indeed as an actual talent. So I thought him threading that match, being the one to start, was a really bit of inspired choice. Like, Tony Khan's so clever at so many things. Just get the basics right. So I thought it was a really inspired idea to have Jay White underpin all of the action and begin it. In his first sequence with Dante Penta, was great because it's like, right, Jay White is notorious for the slow burn, the slow build, the no, the stalling. Not on this match. It's like, right, sudden death. I'll just be as quick as I've ever been. Really intelligently wrestled match from Jay White. Various great moments throughout, like the Commander Lance Archer stuff was really fun. The showdown between Ospreay and Jay White was really well done as well. But it's Ospreay who I yet again have to put over. And I'm trying to articulate, if you haven't watched Dynamite, this bump he took off that Hurricane Rana from, or the head scissors from Commander.
Yeah.
Right. Will Ospreay, I don't know how he moves his body like this, how he can be so fast, especially when you are ostensibly hurting yourself, but doing it really quickly. Like, bumping for me is just like this weird thing that messes with my mind. It's like, how do you do it? How do you do it?
Mm.
He takes his head scissors from Commander, right? And bear in mind, he's standing up. So his bump is, right, what I need to do to make this look as cool as it did, and it looked the tits, I have to headbutt the floor at 90 miles per hour and flip over as quickly as it takes for me to do that. It just looked like he got killed. What a base. What a bumper. What an unbelievable talent. And he wins the match, and I'd think, okay, what? Mm.
Not against him winning this match. And we were talking about this before we started recording. I have no doubt these two are going to have an absolute ripper.
That's going to be class, man. This match is going to be class. I have two different thoughts that conflict with one another at the same time.
Yeah.
Sometimes things go that way. This is an inelegant solution to the Swerve and Ospreay problem, to which there is no really 100% perfect solution.
Yeah.
Okay. The idea is that we've said it. We're not the only ones who said it. As soon as Ospreay came in, it's like, well, the game's just been changed. He's an animal. He's the best. Everyone feels a little bit worse when you are the consensus best wrestler in the world. I think Danielson is, but enough people believe that Ospreay is, and I think he's really close. That's kind of, you just signed your race. You've signed your world champion elect. We've discussed this extensively. And the idea was, right, okay, well, Swerve can have a second consecutive transitional title reign. Thank you. We won't invest that much in your matches because you're losing to Ospreay at Wembley. They might have taken this off the table, and maybe that's not the worst idea in the world, right? Because Ospreay is 30, right? He could be at 34, still able to be as dynamic as he is, an explosion, a firework. We talked about the Commander bump. He could still do that in 4 years at 34 and still be in or around his athletic prime, okay? I've watched Will Ospreay for years. I used to really not rate him that much at all. And if you go back and watch him, he's so goofy at times with his selling. Oh, my f***ing neck! He has evolved so much.
Yeah.
I still think he's got a ways to go.
Mm-hmm.
There's still certain times where I think, right, that's a bit broad. Or your expressions are a little bit on the nose. I think he, in 4 years' time, because he's de-goofied himself
mm-hmm.
so much. Like, if you go back and watch his stuff from 2016, 2017, it's almost cringeworthy how goofy he is and how, like, animated he is in terms of the timing, his body language, his facial expressions. Like, he's almost likable these days, and you look at his history, and maybe he shouldn't be. Like, he's such a great wrestler on every single level, right? They've signed him for, I presume, like a minimum of 3 years. Mm-hmm. I would think even five, right? What's the rush?
Yeah.
What is the rush? Meltzer was making this point, and it's like, you can't just beat everyone then win the title, because what do you do? And you know what you could do? You could do Omega, you could do Hangman Page, you can do MJF. You can do Okada. You can build wrestlers, theoretically, to that level. There's loads for them to do. But what they've done with this booking decision is that they have realized, or maybe it was the plan all along, probably was, oh, you know what's great? We've just seen it with Cody. We've had it in our own company with Hangman Page. The thing that drives everything is the thrill of the chase. Like, they've potentially maximized the value of their key asset by taking him away from the world title picture. And the two birds, one stone here thing is that now I can watch Swerve Strickland's title reign. Hopefully it gets better in terms of the presentation, not the character work or the wrestling, without thinking, all right, okay, you're doomed. Wembley, you're done. They still might unify the titles, or they might even have Ospreay lose, but at least now
you're
thinking, oh, that Wembley match that everyone sort of projected onto AEW, oh, that's not 100% certain formality. Now, here's the bad part. The way the character, like, if you take away the performer, right, the wrestler, he is the most over guy in the company and probably the best, or at least the most AEW fans, gauging by the audience reactions, consider him to be the best. It's flat out weird that he's not the title holder or he's not firmly locked in a world title program with how over he is. The reaction to him at Dynasty was special. Mm. It was so unbelievably loud. He's quite clearly the guy. And that was a bit shocking on Swerve Strickland, because it's like, well, you can't really compete with that. And it's not just you, it's pretty much everyone. Mm. Even Danielson, it was like Ospreay was the baby face. Ospreay got the most chance, and I think Danielson's the GOAT. So now you're thinking, right, okay, well, Swerve has got a chance to stand on his own 2 feet. The thing with Ospreay is when he's that over, when he's that talented, he kind of should be the guy, and that's how these things work. He can't... I reckon he's obviously going to do a fantastic job if he wins it with the international title, but you kind of keep diluting wrestlers all across because there's too many of them. Oh, he can do something with that belt. Maybe the problem, and has been this since he signed too many wrestlers, that one person should be the absolute guy and it's no mistake, and he can invest in that person. Like the Cody role, the Cena role, the Hogan role, AEW maybe needs it, potentially. And on another level, again, conflicting ideas, but two things can be true at once. The way the character is being booked, it makes no sense whatsoever that he's not in the world title program, and I would consider that a booking flaw. And again, inelegant solution to a problem that I've had for ages. Ultimately, my broad takeaway here, I'll let you talk in a minute, I'm sorry, is that I'm glad they've done this, I think, because the Swerve versus Ospreay debate was becoming a real problem. The thing with Ospreay, the character, is that he's beat Konosuke Takeshita, who in the fiction, we saw with the Swerve Strickland number one contenders match, has won a lot. Even if I think they could do a better job with him, in the fiction, Konosuke Takeshita has won a lot of matches. So if you go with the whole idea of it's a bit headcanon-y, this ranking system, in terms of caliber of opponents, Takeshita was way up there in the singles men's rankings. Ospreay's beat him. Ospreay's beaten Powerhouse Hobbs, who defeated Chris Jericho. I mean, everybody else has. But, you know, he's not some bum. Shibata hasn't won many matches, but he's still got that innate credibility. Ospreay's beat him as well. Ospreay's beat Kyle Fletcher, who holds a title and...
was in a title eliminator match, beginning of the show.
Even if you just forget all that, the match at Dynasty was framed as Justin Roberts himself put it, an absolute dream match, right, against Bryan Danielson, who has also won quite a few matches in 2024, right? Not only that, this match is framed as basically the biggest match possible that wasn't getting fought for a world title against someone between two wrestlers who, in the build and in some people's realities, fiction build, some people's realities, are not merely the two very best in-ring wrestlers on the planet. You could be looking at the two best of all time sharing a ring in their primes, right? How is that not a de facto, in everything but name, number one contenders match of that world title? It's one of those, like, what does Will Ospreay need to do to think, oh, I can have a world title shot? You know what I mean? It's kind of ridiculous.
Just looking at it, I know, I mean, it's an obvious point, and everyone agrees with this, but, like, looking at that, so you look at AEW's roster page, Will Ospreay, 2024 overall, 6-0.
Yeah.
Powerhouse Hobbs, 5-5. Right?
Yep.
Kyle Fletcher, 0-5.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I know.
I
understand as well that you can't just say, all right, okay, well, Ospreay's won that. Well, on Dynamite, he has to... It cannot be purely logic-driven. No. Otherwise, you'll never have pay-per-views to sell.
No.
That's why we talk about the headcanon, good faith with the rankings, and that's why I'm saying it's an inelegant solution. But the way they've pushed him so hard, they didn't have to do that.
No.
But maybe no one will ever be happy, because the one thing about Ospreay as well is, like, the one thing else I like about this is that I think it's an inelegant solution to a problem with no elegant solution. And just to continue on, I'm sorry, I will let you talk.
It's all right.
But this is, like, I think this is worth debating, is that this, it doesn't feel like Tony Khan is doing what he's been accused of, rightly, for most of AEW's existence, of just delay tactics, dithering, just, oh, you can't have these dream matches yet. No. And then certain stretches of Dynamite felt very predictable and flat. Mm-hmm. He's given you Danielson Ospreay. He's given you Ospreay Takeshita, Ospreay Shibata. You're getting Ospreay Roderick Strong, which is like more for the freaks than a marquee dream match, but it's still going to be incredible. Yeah. You're still getting dream matches out of Ospreay. You're going to get the thrill of the chase out of Ospreay. You're getting years potentially of a great Ospreay story. Maybe, even though it kind of makes no sense really, this is the best and elegant solution.
Mm. I was 100% with you with the, when Ospreay came out. So I was like, we can't lose here. I mean, he doesn't, I suppose I was like, maybe, but then no other babyface came out and I went, there you go. There's Roddy's next opponent for Double Nothing. It was always going to be Ospreay from the moment he got to shine in this match.
They could have did it so he wasn't.
Yeah.
But they did it. And that's, I think it's the best. And that's no ideal way to do it. Maybe the ideal thing is to have do better roster management 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, they're announcing, I think they said, next week Swerve's opponent for Double or Nothing. And if Ospreay hadn't been in this match, it would have felt weird to be like, it's you, Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, or you, God forbid, Chris Jericho. Or, like, wait a second, he's right here and he's 5-0. I don't think he does win. I think they're still going for the title winner all in. And I think that's probably the right decision.
I just kind of see him losing it with. And no offense to Roderick Strong. They like him and he's great. Even a screwy loss to Roderick Strong.
Don Callis' family's going to cost him, I think. Yeah. Because, the reason I say that is because.
He'd be an idiot if he did that, though, Don Callis. Mm. Wouldn't you want him to have the title and then screw him in a rematch against Takeshita? So as a Don Callis family, you have the title.
Mm. Granted. But I think they are going to give him the world title all in because I think. There's an element of, and I feel terrible for Swerve and all this, because I think Swerve should have won at the last pay-per-view, not, I think they should have won Dynasty, but he should have won at Revolution rather than Dynasty. Therefore, had a long title run, because we know it's going to, or that's why I still think it's going to Ospreay in London, because you have that moment, and there's somewhat of an accusation of AEW occasionally missing the boat, but delaying, past when they should have just gone there.
Do that match. Yeah. Strap that guy up.
Exactly. Look, I understand why they're doing this for the exact reasons you've laid out. You need to keep Will Ospreay busy. He can't just be going. And after that dream match, my big thing is another dream match with this person rather than, why wouldn't you want the world title straight away? Well, actually, that's not very convenient because that's not in England. you've got to keep him busy for a few months and perhaps supporting that. I'm going to skip to what came a little bit later, mainly because I don't want to talk about what came next. Renee Paquette's backstage. Will Ospreay, Carl Fletcher, Don Callis. Don Callis calls Ospreay the Golden Goose. But he's saying, why didn't you use the Tiger Driver on Kyle O'Reilly? And Ospreay says, look, that hurts people. I don't need to do it any longer. Callis is like, no, you should do that. You should really go for that. Carl Fletcher tries to interject. And
this is a great line.
Don Callis says, there's no room for you to talk after where you performed tonight.
Or it's like you can't talk about how to win matches after what you did.
And Callis literally says, Roddy Strong's got neck issues in the past, so use the Tiger Driver to win the international title. And Callis leaves to go manage Powerhouse Hobbs, and there's a little moment between Fletcher and Ospreay. So whether or not the Callis family costing Ospreay because they can sort of sense that he's heading out the door. Because I've always said it's been so weird in this past month or so. Why hasn't he just gone, I'm a huge babyface and I clearly don't need you?
Yeah.
They're obviously heading in that direction, especially with Don Callis being nasty to one of Ospreay's shoot best mates. So whether or not they cost him, or like I say, either way, if you're sticking with what I'm thinking in terms of putting the title on Ospreay, even if he does beat Roderick Strong, he still has to lose en route to All In.
And I don't think it's happening. We'll see.
Andy said this in the news as well. The idea of unifying the title, the international and the world. That's fine. That works. So maybe I'll let this play out.
Yeah. No, I'm really going to let it play out. Yeah. I think they've done a really good job of, hang on. And maybe Dynamite needs that from time to time.
Mm. I'm so sorry. Chris Jericho comes out next.
He always does.
He's got a new song. Def Rebels produced it, apparently.
It's crap, isn't it?
It's rubbish.
I understand what he's doing. He's not an idiot, Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
Is that when people maybe begin to like him again, best facilitated by going away for several months, he'll drop Judas again.
Yeah.
He wants to disassociate people from Judas and preserve the happy memories of Chris Jericho, who used to come out with Judas. It's very smart. Mm. It's a terrible song, but it's he's very smart to this day. There's sometimes even smart people don't have the answers, and he's ran out of answers.
Mm. And he,
but this is a good one.
Yeah, his solution right now is, my character doesn't hear the boos and thinks everyone's cheering for them, which is convenient because no one is.
I was shocked, actually, in case I forget to say, I was expecting more of a party hijack atmosphere. Ultimately, that might have been a one-night aberration and people don't care either way. They can't even summon the enthusiasm to take the piss.
Mm. That's why they have the seat fillers. What a load of bollocks that was on social media, by the way. They literally have
the way they film Daly's place is clever when there's nobody there. Of all venues where they don't need Daly's place to look good is the one where they did great TV with Nee Phantom. Mm. That you can make it look good with 1,000 people with the way the hard cam is set up. But
they use seat fillers at like the Oscars and the Grammys because it looks weird if someone's collecting an award or cutting a promo and there's a big gap on the 150 to 200 people bit. But so I completely understand why they did it. And I think the crowds are dreadful. Not in terms of noise, but in terms of numbers in comparison to WWE or whatever.
Well,
it's
bad.
They're dreadful. Bad. But it's not. That's just
two different things.
Yeah.
Two different things.
Anyway.
One thing I'll say, now that you mentioned where the hard cam was pointed, because I wanted to make this point. I don't like the... I obviously do, because I always caveat this by saying, I don't like taking victory laps. You know what? Sometimes I do. Obviously, I wouldn't take them. I said on yesterday's preview that because of the horrific LED that they do now, it will look with the way that it's so tight, zoom in, hard cam, with not many people at Daly's place. I said it's going to look like a third of the screen on your TV is LED, and it did, and I don't think that helped the vibe whatsoever. No. Daly's place used to look beautiful. It looked genuinely like they were wrestling at times inside of a lava lamp. Didn't it?
Yeah, you're right.
It was so big, that big bar of moving LED. And because, again, it was so tight that that's all you could really pay attention to, it looked like they were wrestling in front of a lava lamp. It looked, how can you make it look ugly? Maybe that puts in a mood.
Mm. Well, this did. He's got the FTW title. He's the learning tree now. They're going all in with this. Taz clarifies that Hook's not cleared to travel due to the injuries he sustained at Dynasty, which makes sense. He was hit in the head with a baseball bat. Jericho's gloating about winning the FTW title. He says FTW doesn't stand for the effing and jeffing. It stands for the world, because it's for all the fans. They won this together. He's doing God's work, he says. He's the god of pro wrestling. Terry Funk, he's taking youngsters to the next level. He says all credit to Hook. You know, you're great. You just need to get rid of that dead weight that surrounds you like Taz and Tony Schiavone. Hook forced him to hit two Judas effects and hit him with the baseball bat because he should have stayed down. And Jericho talks about them. People entering the Jericho vortex and coming out better on the other side.
No.
Disagree. And then of all people to, say what he's about to say, former tag team champion Big Bill.
I use that exact phrasing in Ups and Downs.
Big Bill comes out and says, I've got one thing to say. I need the guidance of the learning tree. I need to sit under the learning tree. I want to learn from the Socrates of pro wrestling. You're always willing to take a less established guy, Big Bill, former AEW tag champ, and bring him right up to the top with you. And Jericho says, I know deep down you're the best fit for the learning tree. I've been a fan of yours for years, and you're one of the reasons why I'm in AEW. I'll keep an eye on you. And Big Bill says, watch me, and leaves. And Jericho
I'll
says,
I'll keep an eye on you.
Jericho says he's going to keep watching him and waves to the fans whilst they all go, what the hell's this?
So even though you put him over the implication with his, I'll take it under consideration because it didn't align there and then. So that's the obvious implication. It's Big Bill. Right. I'll try and go chronologically, right? Can I just shock you?
Go on.
I thought there was an excellent line in this promo, and I'm obviously going to put it over even if Jericho is completely washed and potentially a total creep. It was so well observed. I wish more people picked up on this. The idea of him carrying on the legacy of Terry Funk.
Yes.
Was such a good heel line, because Terry Funk is known as the guy who was incredibly helpful to the next generation of wrestlers. He was like absolutely universally beloved and cutting edge, ahead of the trends, mm-hmm. knew where the cool thing was, but never ever outstayed his welcome, right? All those three things are what Chris Jericho is failing miserably at. He knows it. He's leaning in this meta heel persona. So I thought that him thinking he's Terry Funk when the heat is the opposite, and he kind of knows it and is leaning in. I thought that was so unbelievably smart. And then just as I was thinking, that's not bad at all. That's good. I hate you. I don't hate him.
Cut the dead weight of Taz and Tony Schiavone's nice.
Yeah, I thought that's a really, really strong way into this new learning tree bit. And then it just gets ruined. This, I can only sit here and critique. I don't know how the wrestlers feel. I can only infer from their performances or whatever, what they're trying to do or whatever. I thought Big Bill's delivery here was very stilted and robotic. And I got the indication that he's not really fully bought into this pitch. I might be completely wrong. He might have developed an incredible friendship with Jericho. He might still think Jericho's absolutely the business. He might think, oh, get in, I get to work with Jericho. There was something about how robotic and stilted his delivery is when he's felt so assured and confident and dialed in basically since the firm collapsed. That is thought, there's something amiss here. I could be completely wrong.
You know what I thought? I thought, was this spot meant for Anthony Ogogo?
Yeah.
And then they just pivoted him to... Because I was like, that might actually work.
That might work because Ogogo, who I think has got all the potential in the world, is not, in storyline canon, a former world champion just in the tag team division. The world is an important distinction. He's a former world champion. He's one of the very best in AEW's kind of that style. In addition to the robotic stilted delivery here, I was really annoyed because it's the idea that it just looked like a Mason, Ryan, Jackson Andrews, big, tall, green geek, fresh out of developmental, who's going to be someone's heater, who doesn't have a clue what's going on and needs the guidance. He's Big Bill. He's a in AEW's own storylines, he's a former world champion.
Yeah.
So that really, really annoyed me. You know what else, if you just unpack it, and maybe I'm unpacking it too much, maybe I'm reaching, bro. I don't care. Right. Is that who, like Chris Jericho, who is he not aligned with? Who has he had in his stables? Like, he's very quick to make, like, associations with other wrestlers. The idea that he was like, you know what, I'll keep my eye on you. I will take your application under consideration. That's essentially what he said. Yeah. Big Bill's like five times the horse Jake Hager is.
Yeah.
And Chris Jericho's never hesitated about being Jake Hager's associate and having him as one of his proteges. You know what I mean?
And I was another Jericho stable, is it?
Yeah. Another Jericho stable. Again, God damn it.
Multiple like roots, one tree.
Where have we seen that?
I mean, if it gets young veterans into AEW, maybe I'll allow it.
Yeah. But the idea that the guy who was willingly associated with Jake Hager for 4 years is like his right-hand man and someone he trusts and someone who he will listen to him. And then Big Bill's like, maybe. It's like, you're taking the piss. this is really... Like, it might all turn out good, right? This felt like Big Bill's worst night since joining the promotion.
It felt like they've sort of done this arse backwards, because I feel like what's going to happen is Jericho's going to be doing another rah-rah speech. Boom, light on the ceiling. Oh my God, Hook's back and he's coming to get revenge for what he did. Oh no, he's been jumped by Big Bill, who's proven his point. But then you didn't need him to say, by the way, I'll show you what I can do.
Yeah.
I don't know, I was just like...
Another stable, is it?
IWGP World Title match next. John Moxley versus Powerhouse Hobbs. Like you say, sort of overshadowed this. A, by what came after it, and B, unfortunately, with the injury to Powerhouse Hobbs, I don't know any developments on him. So fingers crossed it's a storyline thing to, I don't know, get him out of the Callis family or something. But if not, we do hope he's all right because he's a big favourite of What Culture's. Moxie tried for a choke early on, but Hobbs's power was showcased throughout this. Floated over a fall-away slam. Did Mox hit a German suplex, but Hobbs just no-sold that and hit a Tazplex to the outside.
Oh, my God.
Powerhouse Hobbs.
That was good.
Yeah. Hobbs tried to attack on the floor, but Moxley sent him over the barricade and they brawled into the crowd. Whilst Excalibur reminds us it's a 20 count because it's an IWGP match. And then, I got really thrown by this. You're watching on Fight. They just went picture in picture. No, like, whoa, what's going to happen as they brawl into the crowd? I just went, adverts. And I was like, okay,
here we go.
Anyway, we come back. Moxley tries a cutter, but just gets pounced by Hobbs. Lovely. Hobbs missed a corner charge, though. And then goes out to the floor and Moxley hits him with a tope. This is the point Hobbs starts grabbing and selling his right knee. Callis, what a git. Do you want to check on Hobbs, Callis? That's what doctors are for. You bastard. Hobbs can barely put any weight on it, if at all. And it looks like, they're just like, should we just, because unfortunately Moxley corner punches him, paradigm shift immediately, two count, and then just wraps him with a rear naked choke and gets the win. Doctors immediately go in to check on Hobbs. And Callis is more concerned about the loss than the injury.
I mean, that was a good bit of improv.
Yeah. And I'm sure Hobbs will understand it, the character.
Oh,
yeah.
Of course, I mean, you have to do business.
Moxley looked in the camera and said, Renneri, you're a dead man. And we see Takeshita staring Moxley down.
I'm not going to go too hard on this. Obviously, the guy suffered an injury and you don't want to add insult to that.
No.
I didn't think the match was trending in a strong direction before it went awry, and I was really disappointed with the approach. It felt like a slow dissection of a bigger opponent when it should have felt like you survived them.
Yeah.
I just thought it was all wrong, didn't get anything from it, but we'll just leave it at that.
Renee Paquette's backstage with Shibata, who challenges Jericho to an FTW title match next week. FTW rules.
Not on Dynamite.
I think so.
So on Dynamite next week, there's going to be a match between a man whose brain was removed from his head a long time ago and Katsuyori Shibata.
He says he's going to chop down the entry. He's got the gimmick on his phone and he has a nice line about Renee Paquette's rhinestones in the shape of a heart.
Could Lee glorified jobber Shibata is going to take a long time to get used to.
Mm.
I'd rather see him than not. You get way more out of them.
Mm. Right. Main event time.
Okay, let's go.
they reminded us during the Moxley match. Don't worry. Jack Perry's still coming. As is Tony Khan. So, Tony Schiavone just goes, Jack Perry's here. And out comes Jack Perry to the reaction you'd expect. Oh, cry me a river. Chance going on. And he walks out there, he's smirking, he's got that face on him, and he gets a mic. Tony Schiavone just goes, oh, there you go, I'm not dealing with this. Just gets out of there. Jack says he's had some of his best nights of his life in Jacksonville, but he's got business to handle. He wants to get face-to-face with Tony Khan. It's been a long road. Almost 5 years ago, it was the first Double or Nothing. AEW has changed the world. It's no secret that he and Tony Khan haven't always seen eye to eye, but he promises the only thing he ever wanted was what's best for AEW. I should say Tony Khan's come out at this point.
Yes.
And he's standing weirdly in the ring.
Oh, yeah.
And smiling and clapping and banging his chest. Jack. Sorry, I just remembered.
You're not meant to be laughing at this. Everyone is. That's the problem.
Jack Perry asks Tony Khan to shake his hand and reinstate him. They can change the world together. And Khan smiles a big smile. Yeah, I'll be Jack Perry, you be Tony Khan.
Okay.
Tony Khan smiles.
Well, get further, get on your knees.
Okay. Okay. So.
That sounds weird. It's because of the downward trajectory of the handshake.
They're both about the same height. So, Jack Perry extends his hand and Tony Khan does this. He goes, shake hands, hug. He cuddles him. Jack Perry's the right side, so the hard cam, you can see him just smirk down the lens. But he breaks from the hug, and they raise, and Tony Khan's doing the point.
Bad. Not good.
Jack Perry punches Danny Cole in the stomach. You don't hear this. In my head, this is going to be like, what's it called? Mandela effect.
You're going to get the Shane McMahon noise.
It's a 6 month time. you're gonna say, do you remember that time that Jack Perry punched Tony Khan in the stomach? And my head's going to go. he goes down like a sack of and then he sort of goes down, doesn't move. Then starts writhing on the floor, clutching his stomach. But out come the EVPs, out come the elite, who say, this wasn't supposed to happen, what are you doing? And it's a nice bit, this. So he's just sort of stood over him, and they're like, you're all right, Tony, up you get. And, of course, in the process of bringing Tony back to his feet, one Jackson's got one arm, the other Jackson's got the other arm. And wait a second, they're in the perfect position for the EVP trigger. But they don't do it. In fact, I think it was Matthew who was like, whoa, guys, come on.
Come on, come on.
Okada, by the way, in this, I can't really describe what he's doing, but he's sensational in it. He's just sort of like, isn't sure what's going on, then does a bit of a thumbs up to everybody.
Oh!
And
kill him.
So they pick up Tony Khan. Like, you're all right, Tony. And then Matthew just grabs him, gets him in position for the Tony Khan driver. Nicholas Jackson jumps up into the corner. Okada does the, how can I describe this? Is it Scott Hall points is the best way of doing it? Woo! Here we go! And he flips, Nicholas flips out of the corner. Tony Khan driver to Tony Khan himself. Jack Perry drags the body of him in front of them and they celebrate. Perry goes into the corner and flips off the crowd. Matthew thanks everyone for coming out. Referees and doctors run out going, what the hell are you doing? And the elite...
Chad Khan comes out.
Yeah, they leave saying it's time to change the world. And yeah, it's full of wrestlers, including, yes, Tony Khan's dad, Shad Khan, is in there. And the show goes off the air. What did you think of this?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I think it's bad. I think it's really bad. I know certainly the execution was from Tony Khan. I think Tony Khan, if you go back over the 5 years and the gates, the objective stuff, and the number three most weeks, and like some of the seminal storylines and the matchmaking, I think he's more brilliant than bad as a booker. It's a TV presence, an on-screen character, kind of. He's absolutely diabolical. Diabolical. He kind of could have promo to save his life. He's playing weird when he's on the microphone. His body language is, what are you doing? If you are not able to sell a beat. The second bit after the Tony Khan driver, that's a very cute Easter egg if it was planned all along. And this is his baby, the new elite, so maybe it was. All you had to do was lie down and look like he was dead. That's not hard. I mean, even John Cena could do that. At the wrong times of the matches, but you know, you could do it. When he got punched in the stomach, and then fired, oh God, I've got to sell that. It's amateur hour. You should not be doing this. You're not good enough to do this. It's bad. So the actual execution, in terms of the tone... I mean, the elite were banter, so that was good. You are meant to, in this segment, receive Tony Khan, who's a billionaire. You are meant to receive Tony Khan as this beloved man who saved wrestling, is the force, the best force for good in professional wrestling in years, maybe even ever, if you're that much of an AEW guy, right? You are meant to think of this as you can. Beat him up. You can never do that. It's Tony Khan. Look at him. Can't defend himself. You're meant to like be disgusted. You're meant to think, Jesus, can he even take that? Like it's a pile driver that was banned in WWE and you've got Tony Khan doing that. You can't do that. And it was just funny. You're not meant to be laughing at it, man, and everyone's laughing. Even the people who were like, I know what, I thought that was a good bit of business. Yeah. I quite like it. Even they laughed at it. If this was as effective as it was meant to be on that board, no one laughs. Everyone's horrified. Right. So that's the execution of it, right? I want to unpack that is this good. Ultimately, right, I'm going to spend 5 minutes, hopefully maximum, on this because we've gone long. What time is it?
About an hour and a half.
Right, Jesus Christ, I'll hurry up. What was I saying? Right, okay. The broad, succinct thing, follow me at M. Sidgwick. This, to me, just felt like, oh, that's a fake pro wrestling angle. That is a fake pro wrestling angle. And it didn't move me. And I laughed. but it didn't really move me. In the idea, I know it just feels like the final frontier has been crossed. He's now, there's heel authority figures, and Tony Khan's an on-screen character. Like, those aren't good things. Those are bad things.
I said we did a video on the YouTube channel about what, and by the way, just to get ahead of it, we did a video on what AEW does better than WWE. And guess what, everyone? We're doing a what WWE does better than AEW video as well. But you can't put two videos out at the same time and think it'd actually make money, so they're going to be staggered. Anyway, what I said on that was, what does AEW do better than WWE? Heel authority figures. I thought I was done with them forever. In terms of not necessarily them being on television, in terms of thinking, oh, good, here come the heel authority figures. Yeah. And the books have made me think, heel authority figures. Wait a second.
Hey. You all right?
They got the balance perfectly for a while.
That video went out yesterday.
Yeah, well, just in time. That's the thing. It's funny you mentioned that goes out yesterday. I've got an editorial in the works that puts over AEW to the Hilt compared to WWE. I wrote, and at the time felt it, it's official, AEW is back. Every time. This is how uneven the promotion is right now. This is how just scattershot everything is. Every time you really want to praise them, I mean, Dynasty.
Oh.
It was on Sunday. They kind of kick you in the ass. They kind of, you get bitten on the arse for really investing fully, and that's not a good thing. So talk about the execution. It's just the final frontier of, oh, there's a heel authority gang running the show now. Tony Khan's a character. They're doing angles with Tony Khan. He's useless on telly. He's useless. He's crap. He's diabolical. He's funny. He shouldn't be funny. Let's go to the logic of this, right? Okay. And should AEW be doing this? What I like principally about AEW, other than the matches and the roster and the booking and the whatever, is that it feels a bit real, or realer than most wrestling I watch. You've got kind of a loose commentary team. I'm just using some examples here. They'll announce most matches in advance. Mm-hmm. It feels like a filmed event rather than this really produced broadcast.
It's rare they'll do like a, oh, do you know what? That's lucky. We didn't have a match for the main event. But I tell you, getting a row earlier on has really helped.
There's a lot of little touches they do. The lack of invisible camera. The acknowledgement of, oh, you know, I can see that camera. They've spent 5 years meticulously creating the idea for you. Oh, that happened in that promotion. We'll just name them outright. You've got history with that person. We'll say this. Like loads of other little things that I'm forgetting. Loads of little touches that are meant to convey to you, this is real. What you're watching, or what you are watching is real. This fictional universe takes great care and attention. Sometimes too often, too much. Mm. It's real. This one's real. So when are the Young Bucks getting terminated with cause? When are the Young Bucks getting terminated with cause?
Think about that. Fearing for your life. Well,
yeah. I mean, if the extent of what Punk did to Tony Khan was revealed on that footage from All In,
he's basically gone like this.
Yeah.
And someone's grabbed him.
I'm not being funny. I'm soft as clots. I would brick it if CM Punk did that to me. Right? I would fear for my life. I don't know, but whatever.
That might be a bit legalese.
I'd really think I was in deep physical danger. It would kick my ass. Even if he gets you in a chokehold, he can die off that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going anywhere.
No.
But he took a Meltzer driver. He actually got struck by Jack Perry and the Young Bucks, right? So one of the Young Bucks getting terminated with cause. I mean, it just collides with the reality that I believe this world to exist in too much. Moreover, right, so here's where I think the only way it can go, right? That obviously, this is obviously a fake work. It's what it is. It's a fake pro wrestling angle, and I felt it. Even though I was quite entertained by it, maybe for perverse reasons.
I thought it was one of the funniest things AEW's ever done.
You're not meant to think that.
No, that's not me being like, I didn't really like anything else they've done. I thought La Dina Debonair was it saved me during the pandemic. And they've done so many skits. Even just like little, you often point them out to me of like, they'll do this and you're like, that's pretty classic.
Yeah, like Samoa Joe, the security guard.
Yes, exactly.
Little moments.
The bloke, I always forget his name, I do apologise. Serpentico.
Robert Stern.
Yeah. The dive. Whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Just stuff like that.
Yeah, but you thought this was the funniest.
I thought this, considering they've put on, general consensus, one of the best matches in US history.
You got more out of this.
I'm more keen when we go back downstairs to immediately rewatch this.
Yes.
We've watched it. Our own houses at ridiculous o'clock in the morning. Watched it again when people are sharing it on Twitter. I've come into work. I've gone to Andy. We've watched it again. But just double check before we talk about this on the news. Just how funny is this?
Yeah.
Watched it again. And then Phil James has come in. And I've gone, Phil, have you seen this? He's like, I've heard about this. And I'm like, well, that's the first thing we're doing is watching this. I want to go and watch it again whilst I have my lunch.
And here's the other thing. So the Young Bucks are doing a storyline, so they will not be terminated with cause in reality. I don't even think of the storylines. I'm going to be fascinated by what... It's good TV.
I can't wait for next week.
I don't think it's good, believable pro wrestling, but it's probably good TV, or at least it's effective TV, because how do they manage this? Because Khan has to sell it. By the way, apparently he's doing an NFL draft, and he's the owner of a franchise. He has to wear a neck brace, at least.
He wore a neck brace for them shooting the Chuck-Trent match.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. I don't know if he's featured. I don't know if he was just backstage, and that was. But that was the report.
He should be in hospital.
Like, yeah, I want the panning shot. I don't know who the NFL owners are. I feel like the Kraft brothers are a name in my head, but I don't know. Just pan along. NFL owner, Tony Khan in a neck brace.
Jagger was great. Oh, my neck doesn't feel great. Oh, my f***ing neck. It doesn't feel great. Here's another thing. So I think where this is going, and again, the collision with reality, where it just feels, ooh, fake, collides with what I think in my head, and it just feels fake, and I don't buy it, is that where I think it's going. And I might be wrong. We'll hold up my hands up. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested, despite myself, to find out, is that Tony Khan, out of commission, can't be an AEW. He can do an NFL draft, but his brain doesn't work anymore, and he's too injured to do AEW stuff, right? So he's out. He's on Booker next week's show.
Who do you draft? Jacksonville Jaguars draft. Peyton Manning. He doesn't.
Yeah.
Tom Brady. Nope. Still no.
So I think, because if you cannot have the Young Bucks get terminated with cause or
presumably
suspended,
they're going to do some EVP. Like, we're EVPs. You can't do that to us.
Or it's written on our EVP contracts that if Tony Khan is unable to fulfill his duties... And he is, because he's injured and he's, you know, he's recuperating at home. We're going to have to take over the show. And I think Swerve Strickland needs an opponent for Double or Nothing. And you know who did a great job in New Japan with loads of great wins? It's Jack Perry. That could be a direction. Mm-hmm. But if that's the case, and they say, oh, the Young Bucks, we're going to have to run the show EVPs because Tony's out of commission. When next in line. Brian, Tony Khan said in an interview last year, Danielson would run the show if anything happens to me. Someone asked him, like, what's the continuity plan if you, for whatever reason, unable to do your job for a while or forever or what? Oh, Danielson. Not okay. He's got experience, 2016, so.
Yeah.
2017 as well. He's got that. It was a fake wrestling angle that I found perversely entertaining, and maybe we've spent too long on it, and I don't think it's anything as hyperbolic as it represents the spiritual death of the company. No. He has crossed the frontier into being an on-screen character. I just didn't like it.
I can't wait for the lights off, lights on return for Tony Khan. Back.
You should learn how to do a destroyer.
Like,
What would Tony Khan's finisher be called?
We were talking about this on the news.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Because I said, you can't escape. You can't see me.
Yeah, yeah.
We just came up with, like, the burning Tony at one point.
Is there any wrestling move that rhymes with great?
Hate, surely there's got to be a move called something hate.
I don't know. I'm never good at remembering moves, so I'm the wrong person to have this conversation.
Yeah.
on the YouTube comments or on X underneath the link to this podcast.
Yeah. I said this. I'm fascinated to see the fallout from this going forward. Like what happens on Collision, what happens on Dynamite next week. Oh, hang on. I'm going to get the button ready.
End of 9 days.
Oh my God.
Yes! Yes, I got there in the end. He would have, Hamlet would have got there within seconds with that.
Fantastic.
End of 9 days.
So I'm fascinated to see this, how this comes. But also, what if this is the thing that brings the ratings back? And I said to Andy on the news.
It feels like a desperate move. If they're pumping out 0.32s, number one every week, I don't even think there's that much to concern themselves with, but you can always do better. Mm-hmm. And maybe I would be alarmed by the 0.23s that have been happening. I think if they're pumping out 0.32s and 0.3, they're not doing this.
I said to Andy as well on the news, can you imagine... Can you imagine this pops a huge rating for next week, let's say, because obviously no one knew this was coming, or it starts a trend in that direction. How much they milked dry Orange Cassidy opens the show. John Moxley does something, and we just always, doesn't matter what he's doing, just have him do something.
Jericho at the top of the hour for like 2 years.
Jericho top of the hour.
God.
Riho. Tony Khan's huge announcement being the most obvious one. I mean, don't get me wrong. As much as I've just said all that, if they dropped the graphic at 9 p.m. UK time ahead of Dynamite, don't forget to tune in this week. Tony Khan's getting his ass kicked again. I'd be like, yep, I'm staying up to watch that one.
I want to get in front of one thing. I don't like me even mentioning his name anymore. People might say, oh, well, Vince couldn't sell the Stunner. And it was meant to be cathartic because he was the heel.
Yes, exactly.
And he was the arsehole.
This is the thing.
You're meant to sympathise with Tony Khan.
People are like, oh, this is so good, it reminds me of Austin and Vince. Not in the right way, though.
No. You're meant to think, oh, Christ, my saviour of wrestling, Tony Khan, is really badly hurt.
It's meant to be, yeah, the real bastard heel has snapped and attacked. Doesn't have to be an elderly person, but that was a perfect example of it, of just like...
Shivani's not the best bumper, obviously, and I feel so much...
Khan's getting pushed over?
Yeah. But when Schiavone's been bumped, example. I think MJF's done it, Bucks have done it. I always go, oh, not Schiavone. Mm. I think Schiavone's more lovable than the eccentric billionaire, quite frankly. Mm. And that's a Hamlet take, but I don't think you would be wrong. Mm. I mean, I shouldn't put words in his mouth. There's enough crisps in there already.
Right, let us know your thoughts on everything we've discussed, as Sid says, either in the comment section below or on X at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcasts from. For daily wrestling podcasts, me and Sidge will be back tomorrow to probably talk a little bit more about this, considering the ratings will be out tonight, and look ahead, of course, to AEW Collision. But for now, this has been the Dynamite Review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.